All right, welcome. We are here today for this episode of the Thereafter podcast. Courtland here, and I got my co-host Josh as well. You want to say hey, Josh?
Hey, yeah. If I sound different to anybody, it's because since the last time I decided to become a doomsdayer, and so I'm currently in a bunker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So Josh is coming to us from a unlit basement. So we'll see how his audio holds up, and it's our honor today. We're super stoked. I'm super stoked to have our guest with us, Jeff Goines. Did I say it right?
I know. I could tell you're a little bit hesitant now.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Yes. And I'm stoked. I'm just really excited to have him on the episode today. And I'm super nervous. I've been following Jeff, reading his blog for, I don't know, 10 years, something like that. And reached out to him and asked, like, total one of those, like, long shot, like, there's no way he's going to message me back. And he totally did. I was like, yeah, for sure, man, next week. And I was super excited. So how are you doing today, Jeff?
I'm doing great, Courtland. Thanks for saying that. Honored to be here.
Cool. Yeah, man, when I reached out, like, I guess I you know, we're brand new, this podcast. Mm. So I'm sure you have, you know, little context as to kind of like what our kind of intention or goal is.
I was thinking, wasn't Thereafter a movie with Matt Damon or something? Hereafter?
Was it?
So after. It was after. I'm going to Google this while you say other things.
All right. That sounds great. If it is, I'm going to use a picture of Matt Damon to promote our podcast.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. That'll work out perfect.
Yeah.
Hereafter.
It was called Hereafter.
Hereafter.
Yes.
I don't know if I even really knew the word thereafter. I did one of those things where I came up with a word that I wanted for the podcast.
Yes.
And it was already taken. So then I thesaurused it, and then I came up with thereafter. So
what was the other one that you were going to call?
I don't even remember now.
Oh.
I fully committed to this one and forgot the other one.
Oh, that's good. Because now the audience is like, we're like second pick. We're like, you know, we're like the second choice audience. Because the first, you know, it'd be a whole different audience if you call it something else.
Yeah, but you know, sometimes the second name. I mean, Twitter was going to be Twinger, and then
Twinger.
No, it wasn't. I just made that
that's,
up. But.
That's a great lie.
Yeah. Yeah. So the kind of the idea behind the podcast, and we're going to talk about this in the first episode that's releasing next week, is kind of talking about the, you know, just the idea of changing beliefs and, you know, evolving belief and, you know, my experience of, you know, kind of deconstructing and going through this change of beliefs that for me was like absolutely terrifying and a really kind of scary process. And through that, I got connected with all of these people who were talking about the same things that I was going through. And it really helped me to be able to feel like, oh, I'm not crazy. I'm not alone. And I want other people to have that experience. And I want to share other people's stories and how other people are navigating, you know, changing belief, which I think, you know, all of us should be changing what we think about things on a somewhat regular basis. So, yeah, that's kind of the idea of the podcast. And I've got like 100 questions. So, at any point where you're like, yeah, I got to go to bed now, just cut me off. But I think kind of where I wanted to start and like the first question that I had was, you know, really for me, there was so much fear that was wrapped up in changing how I felt about things. I, you know, like to say I, you know, knew Jesus since I was born. And mm-hmm. I had this like very, I don't know, like before I knew how to think, I knew what I thought about everything when it came to right. God and the universe and all that. And the fear that I had about reanalyzing that was really crippling for a long time. So curious if you've experienced, you know, in your evolution of thought and belief, if you've experienced fear at all?
I did, yeah. And I have, for sure. I've never really liked the term deconstruction in terms of my own evolving understanding of reality, mostly because I never felt that way. I never felt like I was tearing something down or breaking something. It felt like a moving on, a going deeper. You know, somebody asked me in the middle of this process, like, how far are you going to take this? Because I just had a lot of questions, and the questions were, it was strange because, you know, I was a religion major in college. I did not grow up Christian. I grew up Christian, like, you know, I grew up American, you know, we believed in Jesus and went to church sometimes on Christmas and Easter, but it wasn't like hardcore, you know, evangelical upbringing. I got really into that scene when I was invited to join a band in college. I played pretty good guitar, and every, you know, worship group needs a good guitarist. And I was like, literally, they invited me to play in their band, and they met in the chapel. And I was like, you guys play a lot of songs about God, you know? And I didn't know what like a praise and worship band was or anything. And so that's how I got into that scene. And it became a big part of my life. And I had lots of experiences that, you know, we call divine encounters and all kinds of amazing things. So it became my identity, you know, as it does for many people. And I got into missions and worked for a mission organization and wrote Christian books and, you know, became an author whose faith was a part of his brand. And I started having these questions, and the questions were not like, you know, what if Jesus isn't the Son of God, or is there a hell, or, you know, what about gay people? You know, like, it was none of those things that people struggle with, because I had answers for all those things, you know, that had been programmed into me that I believed were true. But it was this sense that it just didn't make sense to me. None of it made sense to me anymore. And I didn't, like, I'd go to church and I wouldn't feel anything, and I'd be like, why am I doing this? It's not working. And the program response would be, well, it's not about feeling, you know, like, you should, it's not about happiness, it's about holiness. And all these kind of like things were coming up in me, and I just felt this angst. And I remember like sitting in church and somebody doing something or saying something, and I would be like, but what does that even mean? Like, what is that? What are we talking about? And I remember always feeling a bit like an outsider in the church because I didn't grow up around it. And so I would go, what do you mean? Like, and I would notice, you know, when I got really into the Bible, I would notice things happening in church that weren't in the Bible, and nobody questioned them. And I was like, this is strange, you know? Why do we have pews?
Yeah.
Like, that's not in the New Testament, you know? And just like things, and why are we taking an offering? And what is this for exactly? And I just was very curious. So I always was very curious. And if it wasn't real, I wasn't interested. And I remember somebody saying to me in the middle of this process, which I consider more of an awakening process, how far are you going to take this? And I said, as far as it goes. Like, I don't have any sacred cows in this. I'm not going to hold on to something just because I have some allegiance to it. If it's not true, it's not true. Like, if this isn't true for me, then like, I'm going to throw it away. And I hope anybody would do that, right? So was there fear? There wasn't fear for me like, oh gosh, I'm going to go to hell, or I'm a bad person. I mean, maybe there was some of that at the very beginning. And I should say, I didn't know this thing was like, I wasn't doing this thing. It just, I had questions. I was confused. Yeah, so it wasn't the thing that I was trying to do. It was a thing that was happening to me, and I was very resistant to it because I had all the answers. I mean, it was very strange, angsty place to be, where it's like, I remember having a conversation with my wife at the time, and she said, you know, I need to tell you something. Like, I don't know if I believe this the way that I've always believed it. And she said to me, do you believe in God? I said, well, yeah, of course, I believe in God. What about Jesus? I was like, I think I'm good with him too. She goes, what's the problem? I was like, everything. And I think for me, it was the whole belief thing, period. It's like, I believe in this, but what does that mean?
Yeah.
What does it mean to say, I believe that Jesus is the Son of God, and if you confess your sin, if you confess your sins and believe with your heart, you know, you will live eternally, or whatever. And I was just like, these words don't have any meaning for me anymore. And as a writer, as a person who kind of makes his living off of words, the definitions of things became really important to me. And so I was afraid that I was going crazy. And really what I was afraid of is that people would reject me and judge me. And that was probably the main fear, because I would have judged me. Like the me from 10 years ago would have said, you know, would have hardcore judged me, you know, as doing all kinds of silly things. And so I was just afraid of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can totally relate to the social fear. I definitely had a lot of the personal, like, I'm going to burn in hell fear as well, personally.
Yeah.
But the social fear was another huge aspect of it. And I think that kind of leads into another question that I was kind of curious is, you know, I discovered you through your writing about creativity. It was about, you know, about your writing about writing and about creating. And since, you know, I've been through this transitional period, I feel like there were areas where I would kind of like maybe tweak a small belief or a small little thing here or there throughout my life up until, you know, 26, something like that. But then at that point, it was like I was changing like huge things. And I became really afraid of creating. Like, I mean, I had an idea to do this podcast a year and a half ago, and I'm just starting it because I was like, I don't want to say anything because I don't want to create. You know, you talk about having written these books and, you know, talking about, you know, these different things, and then you're opinion changes and your work is still out there.
Yeah.
How do you, as a creative, how do you deal with that reality, or like, how do you approach that, navigate it?
Yeah. So I have a friend who is a novelist and has written dozens of novels, and those novels have sold over 11 million copies worldwide. And many of the stories and characters and ideas he doesn't believe in or agree with, or just doesn't see things that way anymore. And these are stories, you know? And he says every time he walks into a bookstore, at least when you used to be able to walk into a bookstore, he sees his books on the shelves. These are best-selling books. And he's embarrassed by them. And it takes everything in him to not like run up to those shelves and tear all the books off the shelves. And he said, the only thing that stops me from doing that is the understanding that these are my diaries. These books are my diaries, his novels. And so a book, if you wait to say all the things you've ever wanted to say in a book, I mean, you'll never write it, because hopefully we are always growing and changing and evolving. Sometimes we deny that, but we're always getting new information, and we're always having to do something with that information and reassemble it in a certain way. And so one way or another, you are changing as a human. And I look at my books as snapshots of what I thought about a particular topic at a given time. Now, what I will say is I've never been particularly dogmatic, even when I would have called myself dogmatic, you know, when I would have, you know, been very evangelical about my faith. But I've always thought about things in the same way, meaning the what may have changed, but the how, the method, has always been pretty consistent for me. And so, you know, you talk about something like deconstruction, walking away from your faith, whatever. Again, it never felt that way for me. It just felt like I was going deeper into my own understanding, my own way of knowing myself and knowing life and reality. And so it was just like these were in some ways different words for the same thing and different ways of understanding. And it felt like a coming home to myself. So with creative work, I feel like I've always been doing the same thing, trying to do the same thing. I just understand it differently. You know, and something that may be helpful to you, Cortland, is I read this great book by Stephen Pressfield called The Artist's Journey. Yeah, okay. Great book. Steve wrote a book called The War of Art, very popular. But this is maybe his best work, in my opinion. And in that book, he said, the artist is creating not to express herself, but to discover herself. So you don't figure out who you are and then share the things that you want to say with the world. Creation is not an act of self-expression. It's an act of self-discovery. So you don't create to express. You create to actually better understand yourself. And the more things that you make, podcast, blog, book, business, whatever, you're going to start to see the dots connecting, the more things that you make. And your work is not the dots. Your work is the thread that's woven throughout the dots, in my experience.
Yeah, that's a light bulb moment for me, honestly. And I appreciate you saying that. I think that I came from a perspective. You talk about having this genuine earnest or this genuine, you know, you're doing the same thing. I feel like for me, there was so much that was like, I had to be confident in knowing before I created. And
sure,
that was the culture
makes
that
sense.
I kind of came up in was that yeah. You better, you know, that authoritarian type of, you know, idea.
Right.
Developing yourself and finding yourself in your work is not the way I approached creative work or creating anything.
Well, whether you're conscious of it or not, you are probably doing it. Most people who are giving advice to the world are giving advice to themselves. Most preachers who are railing against a certain sin, I mean, how often does this happen? You're like, oh, you know, he was railing against pornography. Guess what he was doing? You know, like,
yeah.
And that makes sense because we are our own little universe. Like we are actually just most acquainted with us. And so when I'm giving you advice or, you know, putting how-to tips on the internet or something, I'm just working with the stuff that I have, which is me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we all kind of project that other people in the world is a lot like us. And so it makes sense that what we create, whether it's a work of fiction or nonfiction, advice, memoir, business tips, technology, whatever, we are essentially discovering ourselves through the work. One of the things that Pressfield says in that book that I found very useful is he says, every artist has a subject, but the subject becomes more apparent the more work that you create and the more you zoom out. So the first book you write, you go, oh, I think my work is about this, you know? And then you write five more, as I've done, and you zoom way, way out, and you write 1,300 blog posts and, you know, appear on thousands of podcasts and stuff. And I go, oh, you know what? I've been talking about the same thing for 10 years, and I just now am beginning to understand what it is. And for me, the topic is identity. And I look back at my work and I go, oh, this was this in a Christian context. This was this in a memoir. This was this in a career context, in a creative context. But all I'm trying to do is answer this one question, which is the question I have always been trying to answer for myself, which is, who am I? And of course, I think that's the most important question for anybody to answer because it's the most important question to me. And so I'm no matter what I'm doing, that's what I'm asking, which is, who are you? Who am I? What is this? What does this all mean? It's all the same question, which is,
yeah,
why are we here? What are we?
Yeah, I love that the who am I and the what is this is really the same question. And it goes back to kind of what you said about like what we know about ourselves is really what we know about the world.
Yeah, because that is our lens for all of it is yeah. us, and we I heard I think it was an Alan Watts program that I was listening to. He said,
"I love Alan Watts."
He said, "You know, you talk about the universe as if it's this other force, but you are made of molecules and atoms and energy and the carbon and water and you know all the elements you know in the universe." Or some of the elements in the universe anyway. And you're on a ball of dirt floating in space. You are the universe. Not in some like esoteric, I am God weird way. It's like this thing.
Yeah.
You're it. Like you're in it. You're a part of it.
Yeah.
So we have this interesting tendency as humans. And I do think this comes from a Judeo-Christian, Western worldview, which is like there's heaven, there's earth, there's me, there's you, there, you know, it's the dualistic nature of Western thinking. And we don't think of the other as the same as us, but you are the universe. Like, the universe is not some cosmic ethereal presence. It's all of this.
Yeah.
We are all part of the universe.
Go 100%, 100%. And
what I think is so funny about these topics is people call them spiritual and esoteric and philosophical. And it's like, this is the most practical thing in the world. Like, what is this? I'm in a room with walls and talking on technology, and it's sending electricity through this thing called the internet. This is it. This is what is, as far as I know. And we call this existence reality. It's part of this place called the universe that, you know, is all that we understand in terms of what exists. And so my question that I'm constantly curious about is, what is this? What is my part in it? And now what do I do about that?
Yeah. I mean, and that was my experience too in developing or changing my faith from being something that was very separate, because I definitely had this very like,
totally,
everything that I was doing was for the afterlife, you know, winning souls and, you know, that whole thing. And when I let go of that, all of, for me, and you know, I have said, in other episodes we've recorded, I don't want this to just be a podcast about how I'm an atheist. Like, that's not the particular goal. But for me, when it became about the dirt and the death and the life and the stuff, it became more meaningful. Like, I was like, oh, I really want to hug my mom.
Yeah.
And I had gone, you know, years, months and years without even talking to my parents, because I was like, I'm on a mission for Jesus and I'm in this militaristic type of,
wow,
you know, mindset that was like, you know, that doesn't matter. Right. Like, you know, I would read these stories about, you know, Jesus, you know, said, who's my mother, who's my father. Right. You know, and that whole, like,
he hates,
like,
his mother and hates his father. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all, I mean, I was in like a cult pretty much.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, having this connection is like, oh no, it's about this that's happening all around me. And like, I'm not paying attention to it.
Yeah.
Was I really relate to it like a kind of a born again experience. Like, I was like, I really got saved when I gave up on that stuff up there and started saying it's right here.
Yeah. Which is weird, 'cause that was a similar thing that Jesus said.
Yeah, it is wild, and there are things. Wild.
Yeah, I mean, we just because the religion bears his name doesn't necessarily mean that he was all about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think it was like really fully developed till quite a bit after his death.
Sure.
Yeah. But one of the questions I had for you is, you know, I went back and looked up. I was on your launch team. Oh, for Wrecked, right?
I remember that, yeah.
And so I was like, I know I left a review of Jeff's book on Amazon. Uh-huh. So I went and looked up the review on Amazon that I left in 2011 or 12 or whenever it was.
Yeah.
And one of the things I said on there was, I sometimes have to remind myself, this is like a pretty much a quote from the review. I said, sometimes I have to remind myself that me and Jeff aren't friends.
Oh.
Because I'm in his blog every day. He's, you know, he's constantly in front of me. The way he writes is so like you're having a cup of coffee with him. Mm. And I'm curious if you really engage with people through the internet. I mean, through your platforms and through your email letter and all of the ways that you have, you know, kind of built this following, you really authentically engage with people. Mm. Like, and I'm curious as to how you maybe have seen that change. Maybe you haven't in the last few years, or if you ever struggle with people feeling like, I don't know, like feeling like how do you, as you change and evolve, how do you deal with people's expectations of you because they feel like they're in relationship with you, I guess. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah, it does. And I mean, I think that the question there is actually, how do I deal with my own thoughts about what I think other people are thinking about me?
Yeah, you know? Sure. That's a good way to put it. And what makes you continue want to engage with people
right,
who often misunderstand or sure, may be, you know, I don't know. I think the internet is typically a very awful place, but yeah. I continue to see you, you know, earnestly and genuinely ask questions and engage with people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have to think about it sort of in phases. You know, the first phase was, I never would have said this, but it was like, I need to get people to like me so that I can like myself. So, you know, call that fame. I need to work really hard to keep everybody happy with me. And that's impossible, but I tried really hard. And what ended up happening was I ended up creating a character that people were most likely to like. And meaning I hid all the parts of myself that I didn't want other people to see, not necessarily morally corrupt things, but just like I showed the things that, you know, I wanted you to see and hid the things that I didn't, as anyone, as all of us tend to do, right? I put a shirt on today because I didn't want you to, you know, see my bosoms.
yeah, we appreciate it.
And so that was sort of the first phase, was I was playing nice guy and I was actually quite afraid of people's rejection because I grew up with a lot of rejection and shame and people making fun of me. And I was a chubby kid and got picked on, got beat up by upperclassmen in high school, didn't have a girlfriend for a long time. And like that stuff doesn't just leave, you know, it stays in your body. And I still carry a lot of that around and I'm, you know, going to therapy and working with that. But my get healed quick solution was God. And then that didn't work. So then I chose fame, and that didn't work. And over the past 2 years, I've been rediscovering myself, you know, the joy of being with myself. And it used to be that if I was alone, I would call somebody, I would text somebody, I would do something, I'd go on social media, because I was constantly looking for other people to tell me who I am. And we all kind of do this in a way, right? Like you don't actually ever get to see yourself. You see an image of yourself. You see yourself through a mirror. You often see yourself through how other people experience you. So I was very concerned with what other people were thinking about me. I was anxious about it. And if somebody didn't like me, if somebody sent me a nasty email or left a mean blog comment, which happened once in a while, I would freak out. You know, and sometimes I'd respond, sometimes I wouldn't, but I would spend days stressing about it. And I wasn't mad. I was scared, you know, because when people didn't like me growing up, bad things happened. I got hurt, you know,
yeah.
One way or the other. And so something beautiful did happen though, when I began to let go of my ideas of reality. So I let go of the idea of success because, you know, I made millions of dollars and it didn't make me happy. And so I was like, oh, now everybody says, Zig Ziglar has this saying, which is, everybody believes that money won't make them happy, but they all want to find out for themselves, right? And so I was yeah. like, I found out for myself, this is actually true, it'll make you happy. And I met lots of people who had more fame and success than I had. And I felt the same hunger, the same emptiness that was in me when I interacted with them. I felt it in them. Like I felt their hunger. I felt their not enoughness. Now I've met some people who are quite successful, who are happy, who are content. So I don't think success is the enemy of contentment. I just think your contentment has nothing to do with your success. Mm. They're different things. And I began to let go of these things, these attachments. So I began to let go of my expectation that work was going to make me happy. I began to let go of my understanding of God was going to make me happy, because it wasn't. I was like, this is actually not making me happy. This constant beating up of myself, trying harder. And I have these doubts and questions. And my initial response to myself is read the Bible more, go talk to somebody to fix you, or pray harder. And eventually I was like, I can't try any harder. I don't want to.
Yeah.
And so I just stopped. I just let go. I stopped going to church. I stopped doing all the things. And I did have this thought, I'm going to become a terrible person. Like I'm going to become a really bad guy. I'm going to realize the error of my ways. I'm going to be the prodigal son and I'm going to come back. And I didn't go to church for a few months and I didn't miss it. And I was still a pretty good person. And as I began to grapple with some of these deeper understandings of myself and what is this, I found I would just go for walks at night or in the middle of the day, and I would just be with myself. I wouldn't pray, I wouldn't meditate, I wouldn't do anything. I would just walk, and I would look at nature, and I was like, man, I'm just tired of doing anything. Like, if I have to do something, I'm out. And I began to experience this peace of just being, of presence, of just being here. Turns out here now is not that bad. It's actually quite wonderful. And I had not spent much time there. And as I began to experience that, I became more present with people. And I realized how often I was trying to get something from somebody. Mm. You know, I was trying to get you to say nice things about me. Like leaving a review on Amazon, you know? That was what I knew. I don't have any shame about it. It was like, I was trying really hard. I have such compassion for that person, for myself. He was trying so hard to get people like him, and it was not enough.
Yeah. Well, and I guess the thing that stands out to me as I hear you talking about that is just how much for myself, how much that was a really consistent undertone of so much of the instruction and advice and teaching that I received throughout the formative part of my life. Is there was this undertone that if you told people that they were okay where they were, then they'll never want to go anywhere else.
I know, it's a weird thing, isn't it? It's not true.
yeah. But I haven't seen that be true for people like you, for people who other people who I have seen become content with maybe the unknowing or the wherever they're at the moment. And they often, through my perspective, gain more momentum in their exploration.
Yeah.
Because exploration becomes something that is life-giving and not life finding, you know. It's not chasing after something. It's really experiencing that.
You know what it's like, Cortland? I just went to Zion National Park with some friends, went on a hiking trip.
Yeah, I saw that. It looked incredible.
I highly recommend it. We went on a couple of hikes. One was to this peak called Angel's Landing. It's said to be one of the most dangerous hikes in America. Wasn't that bad, but you know, some people have died on it. And it would have been like this. It would have been like me standing at the bottom of this 1,500 foot summit and said, you know what, guys? I'm good. I know what's up there. I've got the map. I know it. I can see it. I know what it's like. I know it. I've read all the words. I've seen the maps. I'm good. You guys go ahead, whatever. And they're going, but don't you want to like see for yourself? No. I know. Like I understand. But do you really know? You haven't been there before. No, I know. I've seen the map. And my faith, faith for me is an explanation for the way things are, right? Okay. There's a God, there's a heaven, there's a hell, there's souls, there's angels, whatever, you know, like here's the creation story. These are the stories that we understand our lives through. It's all wonderful. It's very useful instruction. But I was like, I want this to mean something. I want it to lead to something. I want it to influence experience. And in many ways it was not. In some ways it was. And so you talk about the unknowing. It's like, well, yeah, you haven't climbed the mountain yet. You know, so of course you don't know. I think being content with the unknowing is actually just you're content because you're actually telling the truth.
Mm.
You know, what is God like? Well, let me quote Philippians for you. You know, it's like, great. And those are just words. You know, there's a big difference between reading a book on sex and having sex.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big difference.
Yeah, for sure.
There's a big difference between reading 66 books on sex and having sex. And I use sex because it's like, it's an ecstatic experience, right? It can be,
transcendent.
Transcendent.
Yeah.
And And, you know, many people listening to this hopefully can relate to that. If not, you're missing out. It's like, it's not enough to read a book. It's not enough to hear somebody tell you about it. That's helpful.
Yeah.
I got married as a virgin. I had, you know, had not had sex before. I read lots of books on sex, and that was helpful. Useful instruction and reading the book and performing the act were not the same thing. And in American Western quote unquote spirituality, religion, evangelicalism, especially evangelicalism, is so heady. It's so information driven. And you want it, like you said, you want to get the facts right before you do something.
Yeah.
And that, sure. Also, knowing things about God is not the same thing as knowing God, knowing reality, knowing the thisness of all things.
Yeah. And the experience is what changes you. I mean, I have found that I went through when I was approaching things from this instructional perspective, like you say, you know, you read about how to do this, you change maybe slightly, you know, but in the experience is where you go like, oh, I got to do this differently. Right. I need to actually maybe shift and change. Yeah. And again, like I was just always, I guess, I heard so many people, you know, give these warnings of like, well, it was the thing that bugged me the most about growing up in youth group. And you and my co-host, who hasn't been able to say anything all episode, because every time he turned, Josh, listening. Are you still there?
It's phenomenal. It's phenomenal.
Your audio sounds like, pretty good right now.
I moved to a different space. Occasionally there's people walking by, so I do mute. But, I'm just listening and like enthralled. It's great.
Awesome.
I have things. Well, Josh, it's good.
You can say things. You're welcome. You're part of the show too. Josh didn't grow up in this kind of church experience or this youth group experience. And I think you kind of said that as well. Like you didn't have that, your early childhood wasn't necessarily you know, 4 days a week in church like it was for me.
Yes. Yeah. Right. No.
But I was always brought with this, you know, there would always be somebody who got up in front of the Sunday school or the youth group or whatever. And they're like, I went and did, you know, all the sinful things and I'm here to tell you, you know, you don't have to do it, you know, because I'm telling you it sucks. And so just, you know, commit to Jesus. And there was always a part of me that was like, yeah, but I want to go do those things.
Of course you do. Well, and what's beautiful about that is, you know, like use the sex analogy. It's like read a book about sex. This is what the book says about sex. Use any analogy, but I like sex. So read a book about sex.
I think it's a good analogy. We'll stick with it.
And it's like, but like as you were talking, it's like once you get into the bed with the other person, it's like throw the book out there. Like you're learning through the experience. Oh, if I move this way, if this thing happens with this particular person in this moment, regardless of what the book said or didn't say, I mean, that was a good guide. And now I'm here in the moment and I'm learning through the experience. And I do think that information, wisdom, advice, these are all helpful tools to help us navigate the terrain. But it is not the same thing as getting out there, walking and working, you know, with whatever the situation is. I do want to go back to your question about people, because I do feel now that I need people a lot less than I needed them before.
Hmm.
And I realize that anything you need, it's hard to love. If I need you, it's hard for me to love you because I'm going to control you.
Hmm.
If I need you, then you can't leave me. I used to get anxious when I would have breakfast with friends and we'd come up on the hour mark and they'd start kind of doing the thing where they want to go. And I didn't realize this until later, but I would start a new thing. I would ask a new question, start a new conversation to keep them around for 15 more minutes. Cause I was anxious. I was afraid of being alone. Hmm. And, interesting, isn't it? You know, that I built this tribe of people.
Yeah.
Listen to my words so that I would never be alone. And it was incredibly lonely.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't being myself and people didn't know me. And so I find that I'm able to be much more present with people and love them as they are because I'm not trying to change them. And there was an experience maybe a couple of years ago when I was really going through this where I realized it had been weeks, maybe months since I had yelled at my kids. And for anybody who's not a parent, that is rare for me, maybe rare for some parents. And I realized I had not yelled at my kids because I wasn't mad at them. I couldn't remember the last time I was mad at them. And I couldn't remember the last time I was mad at them because I was no longer trying to control them. Because I was no longer trying to control everything. And I realized how much of my life was based on this script, which is there's good guys, there's bad guys, there's a way it should be, there's a heaven and a hell. And I just was honest with myself. I don't know. Those things could be true, but I don't know. And so I'm just going to be more honest about the things that I don't know, right? I do sense that there's something connecting all of this. Call that what you want. And I don't know. I don't know what to call it. I don't know what happens after this, you know?
For sure.
All I know is I'm here in this moment, and this seems real right now. And so I realized so much of my life was I was like really afraid of just being by myself because I was told that I was not a good thing to be, right? I needed God. I needed forgiveness. I needed Jesus. I needed the Holy Spirit. I needed the gift of tongues. I needed the second baptism. I needed to go on mission trips. I always needed more. And I grew up around a lot of abuse, a lot of trauma. And so you tell a traumatized kid that he's not good enough and that he needs to do something to be good enough. Yeah, of course. Yep. Sure. Of course. Yeah. Somebody came to me and said, you know, there's something wrong with you. And it's that you don't have Jesus. I was like, something wrong with me? I know that.
Yeah.
I've known that my whole life.
That checks out.
Yeah. I feel that in my body. Something's wrong with me. I know. And so, you know, Jeff, there's something wrong with you. You need to make more money. Okay. You know, Jeff, there's something wrong with you. You need to give that money away. Okay. Like, I mean, that was just more. It was more goodness, more whatever. Like it was just always more. And to just be, was really beautiful and powerful. And it allowed me to be more present with people and go, hey, I love you. Cause I actually don't need anything from you.
Yeah. I mean, that thing that you say about you can't love genuinely or purely love that thing that you need. I think that also relates in the inverse. And I feel it in the inverse is you really can't feel loved when you are just being needed. I struggle with like, I only put myself in relationships where I am needed.
Oh yeah. Sure.
Like I want to be needed.
Yeah.
And I can't really experience genuine love that way. And even when my relationship with God is God needed something from me. Right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cause it's like, I love you no matter what, just don't reject me.
Yeah.
So is this unconditional?
Yeah. And do this work and don't do this. And
it's okay. I remember talking to friends and I was like, can I do whatever I want? You know, like I've done all these things. Like, can I just kind of go do whatever I want now? No.
Yeah.
I mean, you could, but you wouldn't want to. Well, I kind of want to. So can I? Am I okay?
Exactly.
You know, what does it mean? I mean, I was a good Calvinist. You know, what does it mean? You know, the perseverance of the saints. Well, if you go and do all these things, then you weren't really in the first place. And I was like, well, I felt like I was in. It seemed like I was in. It's like, when do I get to just be okay?
Yeah. And there's also the fact that like, I feel like we as evangelicals need God to be a certain kind of way based off of, you know, the things that we learned. From our parents, like this is right and this is wrong, the wrong way to think about God, the wrong way to think about his scripture, the right way to think about it, the right way to, you know, apply it. And but once, for me personally, once I sort of broke away from those thoughts, my faith in God came become something totally alive to me. And I started discovering like what you're talking about, that trail, you know, now I've reached the summit and I thought I knew, but now it's something completely greater than I ever thought. So it's been, yeah.
Yeah. Cause you're actually letting God, the source of all things, you know, the ground of all being, the isness of whatever this is, be a mystery.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It reminds me of that David Bazan lyric. I forget what song it is, but he says, you're too busy talking. You can't hear the voice of the spirit telling you to shut the fuck up. Plus, you wouldn't hear because you don't believe that he talks that way.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, it's
crazy.
Like,
it's crazy when people are like, you know, I remember having a conversation with a friend one time. Well, God's not male, you know. Well, sure he is. And I'm just like, what? I mean, look. You don't have to go around calling God she or whatever. Like, I get the convention. I understand the patriarchal, masculine, you know, father of all things. Like, I get that. Cool. But are we really, we're going to bank on the fact that that which hold all things together is a dude? Like, that's it?
Yeah. I mean,
it doesn't make sense.
I think, you know, for me, it went beyond, is God a man? Is God a woman? Is it like, is God, I always saw God as a human.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Like,
right.
Like, even when we say
with special powers,
God is a person. Well, yeah. A person is a word that we only assign to humans.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, and so even if we say God is a person, we can say, well, he's not a human, but he's a person, or they're a person, or it's a person, or whatever. Right. Person, I don't know what a person looks like that's not a human. Like, that word is exclusively reserved for humans.
Yeah. Yeah. It's impossible to not like anthropomorphize God. You know?
Yeah.
He's like me, but with special powers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you want something to try to relate to, but yeah, it's like which is not bad, but you know, I think it would be great for, let's get to the place where God is like, is everything that we experience is the universe, but also more than that, like God is the infinite, you know, and that word infinite is like hard to grasp and kind of scary.
It's actually impossible to grasp, right?
Yeah.
It is outside of time and space and extends in all directions forever and at all times. You know, if you think of infinite, you know, you think of like, I think of like the quantum, you know, like it's not just what is, it is the potentiality of all things that could ever be and have ever been. And may in some, you know, alternate dimension be right. I mean, I don't know how this works.
Yeah.
But like, it seems to me, I love that Raymond Carver story. What we talk about when we talk about God. What we talk about when we talk about love. What we talk about when we talk about love, right? Okay. Rob Bell wrote a book called What We Talk About When We Talk About God.
Yeah. Shout out to Rob Bell.
Yeah, but there's a short story that Raymond Carver wrote called What We Talk About When We Talk About Love. And you've got all these couples sitting around drinking gin one night and they're getting drunk and they're talking about love and they're going, well, you know, I love my ex-wife, but she hates my guts. And, you know, this woman says, I love this guy, but he was abusive to me and I love my, you know, new wife and that's going well and we're in love and we're using love for all of these different situations. And I love pizza and I love my dad, you know, but these all kind of mean different things contextually and it's all the same word, which is love. And one of the characters says something to the effect of, I think we should all be ashamed of ourselves when we talk about love, thinking that what we're talking about is actually love. And I think that there should be a certain humility when we're talking about something like God to go, it's sort of like this, but not this.
Mm.
You know, I'm fine with that. You know, mm-hmm. it's like your dad, remember how authoritative and strong and amazing and supreme and powerful your dad was? You remember when you were a kid and that's what your dad was to you? It's like that. He's like a father like that, but not just that.
Yeah.
More than that.
Yeah. Richard Rohr has a great kind of thing about that in terms of the only way that we know how to talk about ultimate reality is with myth. I mean, that's the only thing that we have.
Of course. Yeah. Cause it's like this and more. So I think we get confused when we think the metaphor is the definition.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. So I know we're probably, I don't know how much time you have, but I wanted to kind of just round back to what you talked about. The thing that is the most interesting to me personally, because I'm using this podcast as personal therapy. So cool. In a sense,
yeah,
is I don't like to be alone either. I, yeah. I, my wife is a loner, and I will constantly, the last 2 years I've traveled a ton. And when I travel, she just, you know, sits at home and hangs out and watches TV and does things at home. And if she's gone for like 6 hours and doesn't tell me in advance, I get like severe anxiety. Sure. I'm like, I should have planned something for this time. I can't, you can't leave me at home here by myself.
Yeah.
I would have called someone to babysit me. Mm-hmm. And I have my son, you know, who's here, I don't know how to do that. And so when you talk about that, everything in my body is like, oh, that's me. What are things, you know, maybe some practical things or maybe some, you know, not practical things that you have experienced that have helped you connect with yourself and let go of that anxiety?
Well, I mean, I do think it's helpful to name things and understand what's going on. I mean, I didn't even really know that I had a nervous system until a year ago, and that not everybody wakes up feeling triggered, activated, like I feel electricity surging through my body. Like I got to go do something. I can't just sit still. I've got to talk to somebody. I got to call somebody. I got to text somebody. I got to look at something. I mean, that's a very real thing for me. That's anxiety, right?
I've got that.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. What has been helpful? I would highly recommend a book called Attached, which talks about attachment theory, which talks about different styles of how we connect and bond with people in relationship, particularly partners, spouses. And it has a lot to do with our parents. I have what's called an anxious avoidant attachment system, meaning if you and I are texting and then you just stop in the middle of the text conversation, don't say goodbye, and ghost on me for 6 hours, I think you're mad at me. And if I'm in I'm going to start getting anxious. And if I'm not in a healthy state, like I'll kind of chase you down because I want to create that connection because it feels like the relationship doesn't exist to me until we reestablish the connection. So, I like that a lot. Attached is a great book. Trauma therapy is really good. The Body Keeps the Score is a great book, you know, kind of a primer on trauma and how it works biologically. And trauma is not just, you know, somebody raped me when I was a kid or, you know, my house burned down or whatever. It can be something that happened to your grandparents or great grandparents, and it just got passed down to you biologically at a cellular level. And then like legit trauma therapy, you know, meeting with a trauma therapist, EMDR, has done wonders for me. I did 6-7 years of talk therapy, and in 3 months of EMDR, I mean, my life was completely different.
Yeah.
In contrast to the talk therapy. And one of the things I like, the best, cheapest practice that I have is going for a walk every day. Like I was, you know, I got into that like kind of heightened anxious state today just by like having lots of conversations with people. I don't know if you do this, Cortland, but it's like, you know, interview, call, this thing, meeting, blah, 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 lots of people. And I just go bam, 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 bam. And then I stop and I realize like I'm kind of been like this all day. I've kind of been high and alert and just going and I'm tired.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to just be.
Yeah.
When I feel that way, and I often wake up feeling that way, and sometimes I'll feel that way in the middle of the day, or I just get in a state where I just can't sit still, I go for a walk. And bilateral movement, anybody who's familiar with EMDR may know, EMDR is just a type of therapy, and there's different ways to do it. But the person who discovered it, as I understand it, discovered that when they took their patients for walks and they talked about trauma, memories, whatever, that they would get much more emotional when they were walking. I get better ideas when I'm walking around. This interview would sound very different if I were walking. And I take lots of phone calls on the phone because it stirs something in me. And it's getting your, when you're moving right, left, you're getting your right brain to talk to your left brain. And it's creating connection there in the brain, as I understand it. And so for me, you know, meditation, yoga, okay, fine. But like, I got to move. I got to do stuff, right? So yeah. Like daily walks, having a good trauma therapist, and then like understanding that this is a thing, you know, like understanding that when I'm in a heightened state of anxiety, there are things that I can do to ground myself. I'll go for a walk. Sometimes I'll take a bath. That helps. I'm all about the the man baths.
Yeah.
But like the thing that saved my life probably is just going for a walk every day.
Changed my life. Yeah, that's good advice. I mean, for me, it has been the sauna. I bought a sauna and I put it in my house and I love it.
And you can just be there. You can just chill.
Yeah. And I can just sit in there and I get out of it feeling like I went for a run because my heart rate's like 150 beats per minute or something.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like exercise. You burn like a bunch of calories in there.
I've heard about the home sauna. I've heard about this movement.
It is a real thing. It's been awesome. But I think the walking thing, there is something to that. I don't know that I've ever done it intentionally, but I can think back to moments where I've been walking. Josh and I are part of like a small group. I'm the token atheist. He's the token messianic Christian. It's a fun group.
That's great.
And we met in a park during COVID, you know, during COVID, we were like, well, we're going to meet in a park because we were meeting on Zoom. And as they, you know, eased up restrictions, we're like, we're going to meet in the park. And I was walking around the park and I remember feeling like, I just feel better.
Yeah.
And I had been sedentary for so long during lockdown and everything and just sitting and working on my computer. So that's really, I mean, it's simple but helpful advice because I can look back at my experience and go, yeah, that's probably true. I've never connected those dots.
I love being out in nature. I love getting up and going for a walk almost every morning. And it's not a discipline. It's a practice. It's not something that I force myself to do. It's something that I do to kind of feel normal. And I think it's okay to just go, you know, I went for a walk today and I was like texting people and checking social media. Like I wasn't super present. And then I just kind of like stopped and looked up at the sky and I was like, oh, there's clouds here. This is amazing. You know? And I think it's just, it forces me to be present even when I'm kind of checked out. And I think being really gentle with yourself, because, you know, anxiety, trauma, and, you know, and this year especially, it has created a lot of heightened anxiety and depression in people.
Fucking tell me about it, man.
Yeah. It's like, I think we have to be careful we don't shame ourselves for whatever we're feeling. Cause now you're kicking your ass on both sides. You're like, you know, I'm feeling crazy. I'm feeling anxious and now I'm feeling shame about feeling anxious, you know? And it's just like, give yourself some grace and let yourself feel whatever you're feeling.
So I guess the last thing, that I'm kind of curious about, you know, so that, you know, people who are hearing this and people who are maybe hearing about you for the first time, where, you know, what's next? What are you working on? Where can people connect with you? I'm kind of curious what you're really working on at this point and what you're doing.
Me too.
me too. Yeah.
I feel like I've been in a cocoon. I feel like I've been in a chrysalis, a creative chrysalis for a year and a half, maybe 2 years. And in that I've just been kind of in a holding pattern. And I think I'm still in it, but I think I'm coming out of it soon. And so hopefully next year I'm going to roll out whole new message, whole new brand, a whole bunch of new things. I started my blog 10 years ago. And so I want the next 10 years to be different, build on what I've done. I'm proud of what I've done. And there's more. And I would be shortchanging myself if I just kind of stayed here. So what I'm up to now is I continue to do the online writing courses. I have a book brewing at some point that will be about maybe something along these lines, certainly about trusting myself. And the power of, you know, trusting your own intuition. I did not do that. I didn't know how to trust myself. And that's something that I wish more people understood. And, you know, you can understand that from a spiritual perspective. You can understand that from a whatever scientific, secular perspective. It just comes down to like, can I trust all of my faculties and make good decisions and all of that? Anyway, one of the things I'm doing a lot of people don't know about is I'm ghostwriting. I'm writing with a team that I have a little creative agency. We're working on about a dozen books right now for clients.
Okay.
And so that's been really fun.
That's cool.
And next year I'm going to have a new podcast and a new vlog. I have to say these things so that they become real.
Yeah.
We're planning all this, but I've got some new stuff coming. And I think it's going to feel like what it felt like 10 years ago, which is starting a little bit before I'm ready, but I'm excited.
That's cool. And goinsrider.com?
Yes. Still goinsrider.com is where the things live.
Awesome. Awesome. Jeff, thank you so much for coming on and doing this with us.
Pleasure. We're
fucking honored.
Yeah.
Right, take the time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cortland. Thank you, Josh. The fucking honored is mutual.
Awesome. Awesome, man. Well, you take care of the rest of the day, and we'll definitely catch you on the flip side.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Well, thank you guys for tuning in today to the Thereafter podcast. We have just been blown away at the support that we've received so far. All of you for listening to our first episode, for coming back for episode 2. As always, if you could remember to subscribe or follow on whatever podcast catcher that you're using, if you could go over to iTunes and rate and review the show, be a huge help to us in helping spread the word. We are so excited to bring you some more incredible interviews over the next few weeks, so keep tuning back here every Tuesday for new episodes. Until then, we will catch you in the Thereafter.